All right, so peace, brothers and sisters. I want to welcome you to this week's Black Wallace Matter Town Hall meeting. My name is Brother Lou, and I will be your host this evening. So if this is your first time calling in, I want to run down a few ground rules for how we manage these calls. They usually last for about 2 hours, but if we have a really good one, we'll extend it. So let me just say in advance, we appreciate you coming to hang out with us tonight. So I hope you're feeling inspired and empowered because you are now on a platform with a group of like-minded brothers and sisters who have come together for the purposes of discussing solutions to many of the problems we face in our Black community in an organized and in an intelligent manner. So if you remember when you called in, I addressed you as either brother or sister, and the reason we address one another as such is to show you respect and as a sign of solidarity. So during these calls, we don't discuss religion, we don't discuss the Black male-female dynamic, and we do not discuss political party affiliation. We can discuss politics as it relates to Black people in America and how we can use it to improve our situation, but we don't want to get into a discussion about which party did this and which party didn't do that. The reason we don't discuss these topics is because they're all opinion-based, which means no one is right and no one is wrong. We'll be here all night arguing, going round and round in circles, and not making any progress. So for all the new callers, let me just tell you a little bit about what Black Wallace Matter is. So Black Wallace Matter is a member association comprised of brothers and sisters that believe the only way we are going to fix the problems in the Black community is if we do it ourselves and we start using the power of the Black dollars that we already have. So, you know, I think about the challenges that we have and the progress that we're trying to make as a people, and really what it will take for us to succeed. And as I think about it, the Black community really only needs like three things to succeed. So number one, we need economic power. And we already make and have the money. We have about $1.3 trillion to be exact, right? That money just needs to be channeled into systems that benefit us instead of generating profits for people outside of our community. A dollar circulates 6 hours in the Black community. It circulates 17 days in the white community, 20 days in the Jewish community, and 30 days in the Asian community. The main areas of our discretionary spending are shopping on consumer goods, health and beauty products, services, entertainment, right? So that's where we spend the vast majority of that $1.3 trillion. Now, I'm not here to preach to you about how Black people need to save more money or invest their money better, right? Because we all know these things. But, you know, people are going to do what they want to do with their money, right? So why fight it? What we're trying to do is create a way to get back a percentage of all the money that we spend outside of our community. I mean, I think that's like part of the main solution to, you know, some of the challenges that we face, right? So why go around trying to convince people to change their minds and do something that they haven't been doing for years when you can figure out a way to tap into what they're already doing? And so there's a way for those things to happen, you know, and I'll get to it in a minute. The second thing that the Black community needs is political power, right? So this is the American way of making things happen. Our collective votes are the most powerful asset we have, but we don't use them properly. Most of us, we pledge our votes to the same party every election without even considering the politics of the person running for office. We don't make the politician jump through hoops to get our votes. We don't hold them accountable for delivering on campaign promises, and we don't make them propose policies that specifically address our issues or benefit us as a people. Other ethnic groups, they don't do that. So, you know, if you want to know how powerful our votes really are, have you ever stopped to think why, you know, back in the days we were considered 3/5 of a person in the Constitution, right? So, you know, don't get mad for a moment. Just think about that, right? So put your anger or whatever it is aside and just think for a minute, right? We were considered 60% of a white man. And the important question is, why would they even designate someone that was deemed chattel, you know, property like a cow or a horse or chicken or any, you know, why would they give us any percentage in the Constitution? They didn't have to do that at all, right? But they did, because it gave them more political power gave more political power to the Southern slave owners. So not only did that, you know, that slave owner have his vote, he would also have the voting power of his slaves, and that will allow him to control politics, right? Every move the powers that be that make, especially right now, right? So we're talking about the corporations. It's either for money or political power. In most cases, it's just both, right? They influence politics so that they can influence policies that benefit them as corporations and, you know, them as the elite. So, that, you know, as the second largest minority population in this country, we've been eclipsed by the Latinos, right? We have money and we have political power. So what we need are a group of people who are down to use those powers, right? I'm down. We have 444 other brothers and sisters that are down, right? So let me just tell you, like, what the last point is and how we can come together and get the ball rolling. The last thing that the black community needs to succeed after political power and economic power is an organization that people can trust. When someone does the black community wrong, the organization can get the word out to the rest of the community to take action. So a while back, there was an incident where there was an Arab store owner. He held a black man hostage at gunpoint and was whipping him with a sword and things like that. That thing went crazy on social media. And then there were some people that went down to that store. But, you know, basically all they did was, like, march and protest and, you know, do all these other things. And then they had a temporary boycott. What they should have did was go down there, pool and organize their money so that way when they formed that boycott and that business shut down temporarily, they could have opened up an alternative store, a store owned by black people that actually cared about that community. Those are the kinds of actions that we have to do. But we need organizations whose main objective it is to do those types of things, not go out there, march, protest, and tear things up, right? Most importantly, we need an organization to provide individuals who will work tirelessly to execute the objectives and the things that work for the benefit of the black community. Right now, all of us, you know, we want better for our people. We want to do this, but then, like, life gets in the way. So we can't really focus on that goal. We can't focus on that objective. What we need is to pay a group of people to get up every single day. It is their job to push the ball forward for our people. That is what is required, and that is going to require a governing body, right? So this organization, we've been together, working together now for about a year now. We're brothers and sisters from all across this country, different regions, different customs, different beliefs, different ways of life, but the core group of people, we have decided to put our differences aside and work for the benefit of our people. But being distributed the way that we are, there's only but so much that we can do. We need to form a group of physical people in a particular place. So what people need to do at the beginning, we need what the organization needs to do at the beginning, is pool the resources. That's what we need. Right. Whatever reason is, whatever things have happened in the back, you know, in the past, we had black community advocacy groups and other leaders, but, you know, they aren't doing too much for us now. Like, either they're complacent with the success they've already achieved, or they're out of touch of what's going on, or they're using ineffective strategies of protest. Right. Whatever the reason, like I said, we can't dwell on it. We can't cry over spilled milk. We need an organization today where its members, employees, or whoever it is, they jump out of bed each morning excited to tackle one of the many challenges that we have in our community, right? But like I said, the key is that we have to have the resources to work with. Paper and ink needs to be bought. Websites and other technical assets need to be created, maintained. Research has to be done. Content needs to be written, recorded. Messages need to be broadcast. Things need to be acquired, right? So all of these things require work and investment. And it's exactly what we need as a people if we're going to succeed. But it has to be in an organized structure. There are those of us who would forsake our careers and our interests to work hard, fight tooth and nail for the cause, but they will not be able to do it without money. That's just the way that it is, right? So we can't realistically expect anyone to take a vow of poverty just to push the black community or push the cause forward. People have mouths to feed, they have clothes to buy, and they have lives to live, right? I'm all in for the cause. I know other brothers and sisters are all in for the cause, but we can't do it alone, right? And I don't expect any single person that's listening to me to make that ultimate sacrifice, take the vow of poverty or whatever it is, or sacrifice the well-being of their household, right? It's just not realistic. But if you care enough to want to help us move things forward, then Black Wallets Matter is definitely an organization that is focusing on creating that type of organization, creating that type of infrastructure, right? And if it makes sense to you, then hopefully you'll agree that it's worth supporting. Because our organization is based on the points that I just outlined. We need to harness our economic power in a way that doesn't really require our people to radically change their behavior, because they won't, right? Other ethnic groups have found a way to tap into our money supply and deplete us of that power. Right, they did it without talking to us. I tell brothers and sisters this all the time who speak to me. We do not need to go around talking to 40-some-odd million Black people trying to change their minds. All we need to do is find those who already think like us. It's called being like-minded. And we have already begun summarizing and figuring out what like-minded means, like what it means to this organization. And I'll tell you about that in a few minutes. But those other ethnic groups, they never sent an email, a memo, or whatever it is. They have figured out a way to harness our economic power for themselves. And so, to be honest with you, all we got to do is just copy it. We don't even have to think too hard. All we have to do is look at what they are doing, and specifically the Asians and the Arabs, right? They are in our communities just sucking the money out like crazy, and they don't have any high-profile, you know, any high visibility in politics, or their, you know, or even in the economic standing. As we all know, America kind of hates the Arabs because they're Muslim. We know these things are happening. Yet, despite all of those challenges, despite that hate, they are still finding a way to thrive, and that's what we need to realize. We're all pissed off and upset about slavery and, you know, whatever happened. But the bottom line is that there are people who are being targeted as well, or who are not liked, and they are finding a way to succeed, and they are succeeding on our backs. And so what we need to do is we need to start using those same resources, those same strategies to benefit ourselves. I called Brother Cujo early this morning. Very excited about like what some of that would look like, and this is just a rough example. So let's just take the corner stores and the convenience stores that all these Arabs have in our communities. If a group of us were to pull the money together and then start saying, you know what, we're going to create these corner stores, but we're going to systematize everything and turn them into something of a franchise type opportunity. This thing will solve so many problems that we have in our community, right? If we turn it into a franchise opportunity, there are many brothers and sisters who are looking for businesses to start. They're looking for places to invest, but they just don't really know where to turn. If they find out that, hey, listen, here's a group of brothers and sisters that put something together specifically for you, they'll be like, yes, I'm on board. Those brothers and sisters will be creating jobs in the community where they can hire more brothers and sisters, right? The ultimate goal of this organization to create the change that we want is to build community resource centers in areas that desperately need them. I grew up in a rough environment. When I was younger, when I walked out my front door, there was no opportunity. There was nothing productive to get into. It was only trouble. And what I know is that, I lived someplace different when I was, when I was even younger or whatever. And I grew up like at the early part of the 70s and the 80s before the crack epidemic really hit. There was different. There were things to do. There were community centers. There were things for you to get involved in. And that's what we really want to put back into the communities. We want to put these community resource centers where we have job training, where we have cultural training, where we have job placement, and all these other different things that our community desperately needs. But they need to be sustained by the businesses. And those franchises, those corner store franchises that I'm talking about, a portion of the royalty that we receive as the franchisor, we could put that right back into the community resources. That's a modern plan for modern day problems, right? And it's right in front of us. And think about it. You go some places, there's a corner store on all four corners. There is the demand. The demand is there. Those businesses, I mean, when's the last time you've seen a corner store go out of business because they don't have enough customers? Most of our brothers and sisters that live in the hood, they don't leave the hood. They do their grocery shopping at the corner store. That's where all the money goes. And we could use that for the benefit. It needs to be taken, but it doesn't need to leave with, like, in 6 hours. It needs to be recycled. It needs to be invested back into the people, right? That is creating a system. We are right now, we're being hit with systematic oppression, systematic injustice. And the only way to combat that is with systematic improvement and countermeasures. Our oppressors, they no longer use physical chains to enslave us. They use mental, economic, and political chains in these modern times. That's why we need a modern solution, right? We have to use the same type of weapons to liberate ourselves. And I have no doubt that we can do it because we already have 444 other brothers and sisters who have joined us to get the ball rolling. And so my question to you is, will you come aboard, right? We are a membership organization. Our membership dues are $10 at the silver level. It's $10 a month, $25 at the gold level, and $50 at the platinum level. We have a goal to have we have a 5-year goal of having 1 million founding members. Not founding members, just 100 total members. Our current goal for 2018 is 2,000 founding members. So the other day I was speaking with a brother, and I found, like, some notes about this organization before the, you know, some notes that I was compiling before this organization even came about. So I had broke down exactly what we wanted to do with the different membership levels. So, like I said, we're currently looking for 2,000 founding members, right? This is the stage that we're in now. We want to create benefit packages for our members. Right. So we want it to be where if you're paying your $10, your $25, your $50, you're receiving some value in exchange for that contribution. Currently, what we are doing, we have a nonprofit organization that we are affiliated with currently. So we're allowing the membership dues to be written off at the end of the year. But we want to provide even more value. And so at the onset or the inception of this organization, I was speaking with people that could offer us discounts. So if we're the largest consumers in the country, that means we shop a lot. And so I wanted to figure out a way that we could provide our members discounts on the things they already bought. So if you already shop at Walmart and Target and JCPenney's and Amazon and wherever else it is, if you are a member at $10 a month or $25 or $50, if you receive discounts that would give you $20, $50 or $100 in discount, that would make your membership dues negligible. It would be worth it. The challenge is that we need 5,000 members to actually do it because it costs $5,000 a month minimum to implement this type of system. I was speaking with Brother Cujo earlier, and I told him that the guy from the company, he called us. And so basically at the inception of this idea, I actually paid the $5,000 for us to have the plan. But it requires $5,000 every single month, and we didn't have the members. I figured once we get to 2,000 members, oh, yeah, you know, the other 3,000 members, yeah, they definitely would become, you know, rolling in shortly thereafter. But unfortunately, in our first year, we fell a little short of the 2,000 members, and we only wound up with 400 and some odd. But that is still the goal. We want to make a package that is worth it to bring more people on board. So there are some people who they feel that what we have to offer is valuable, but because life gets in the way, because they have other obligations, other bills, they may not be able to make the monthly contribution. So we want it to be like, well, okay, you can contribute to the organization, and now when you go to Walmart, instead of you paying full price, here's your discount. And over time, it will wind up being more than what you spend on your membership, right? So from 2,000 to 100,000 members, we want to hire staff, and we want to build a shopping portal. I revised this and said, you know, now I believe that we can build the shopping portal with the 2,000 founding members. The shopping portal is basically a way for all of us to go on, do all of our online shopping, and the organization still would receive a portion or commission essentially on the shopping that's done, and it doesn't cost the member one extra dime. So that's essentially us getting, it's like free money. It's money that's just sitting on the table. It's there and we're not using it. And once we build out this shopping portal, once we build out this thing that I'm talking about, I mean, the amount of money that we could possibly make on a yearly basis is like stupid, right? There's a company that this is modeled on. They've done $2 billion. Since I wrote these notes and was looking at the different business models, there's another company that was created. Last year, they did $200 million. That company is only like 1 or 2 years old, and they're $200 million already. That is how this organization, that's the kind of revenue that could flow into an organization, right? If you have an organization bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars, there's not a lot of trust that people have to have. Because you can go buy the things that you want, do the things for the community, and there's more than enough money going around, way more than enough money to go around. And I've taken in some of our character traits into consideration. There's going to be some people like, oh, man, well, who's going to manage the money, how it's going to be. I'm trying to take a small amount of money and leap that into a larger piece of money, so that way no one has nothing to argue about, because you're only paying $10 or $25 or $50. You're getting way more than what you put in from the organization, and now the black community is also reaping the benefits. And that's kind of like the fail safe on this. And then when we get to some of the higher membership levels, you know, $500,000 to $1 million, that's when we can start rolling out these community resource centers that I talked about, these job training facilities, these safe places for these children, these cultural centers, things like that. We would have the money to roll them out nationwide. It's a very, very realistic plan. This is not like some pie in the sky, unthought, just like I'm pulling it out of my butt. I've actually sat down, did the math, and like figured all of this stuff out. It can be done. 1 + 1 = 2, right? And so all we need is to get that group of core members, the 2,000 founding members. We have some characteristics about what makes a good member for Black Wallets Matter. I want to share some of these ideas with you. If you feel that this is if you feel like this is you, some of this stuff resonates with you, then this is definitely an organization that you want to be a part of. So we have brothers and sisters that we wish to become members that are open-minded, right? Understanding, like I said, that we have an economic and political problem and we need an economic and political solution. Feel that they're strong enough to take on this fight and stay in the fight, right? Because that's what we really need the most. We need brothers and sisters who are committed to the cause. We need brothers and sisters who are intelligent and practical and logical and resourceful, right? We need brothers and sisters who feel that they are not powerless and that they actually have the power and the ability to bring about change. And most importantly, we need brothers and sisters who are willing to set aside their personal differences, willing to agree to disagree so that we can push the organization forward, keeping the true mission ahead of us. That's what we're looking for in a member. We have a bunch of other qualities we're still working on, and we're still refining those qualities. And so that's what I alluded to earlier when I said like-minded. We are still working on and refining exactly what the definition of like-minded is amongst ourselves. But if any of the qualities that I just mentioned, if that sounds like you, if it resonates with you, if our mission resonates with you, if this cause and working with brothers and sisters who are talking about doing things in a logical, practical, step-by-step way instead of just getting all riled up, going out there and tearing up stuff for no reason. If any of that makes sense to you, then we invite you to join us. Come on board. You can come on board as a silver member. They're $10 a month. Anytime you decide you don't want to be part of this organization, you can cancel. You can pick up the phone and call me, send me an email. You can cancel from within the members area. So you really have, like, no risk. You would just be helping us build some of the things that black folks have been talking about since, like, Marcus Garvey, right? Because if I'm not mistaken, you have the Nation of Islam, the Nation of Islam. But it would be a modern organization. And we are about action, and we're about seeing incremental improvement in the communities that need it the most. We are about being selfless. That's another quality. We need brothers and sisters who can to do for those who can't. Those who are truly invested in building and structuring a legacy, leaving something for future generations, leaving this black community better than what it is now. Because, you know, maybe some people may have come in and, you know, at a time when black folks weren't really having it, you know, as bad as it is now, because right now it's terrible. So with that said, I am going to put it in Q&A mode. If you have any questions about anything that I said, then you can ask them. But I really would like to move forward with a discussion with the topic for the night. So let me put it in Q&A mode. If you have a question, then press star 6. Just give me a second. I have to get my whistle. Okay, so it looks like no one has any questions about what I said tonight, so that's cool. So everything is clearly understood. So let me pull up some of this. So let me ask you this. So here's the question that we want to, something that I talk about, not with everyone, but like here's a thought that I had. I have this belief that we have to make it profitable to invest in the success of the black community. And what I mean by that is right now, the apathy in our community is sad, right? So and what I mean by that is when we look around at, you know, our youth doing some of the crazy things they're doing, when we look at some of the crime that goes on and, you know, the levels of poverty and things like that, why is it that we are not so motivated, so moved by what we see to take action? Like, why isn't it galvanizing us to move forward? And as I study that, you know, and I remove my emotion from the situation, and I said, well, let me look and let me see how other people motivate black people. And what they do is they motivate them through money. Money is the greatest motivator. I am no exception. I mean, you know, you can get me to get my butt in gear if, you know, you dangle the right carrot in front of me, and it's usually, you know, it's money. And I'm wondering, like, how could we make, you know, how could we provide that incentive for people to help themselves? How do we structure it, right? So even though, like, the thought of it, right, like, why you got to pay people to help themselves, that may sound, you know, stupid or crazy, but it, realistically speaking, that may be the solution, because you got to look at what we're doing, right? So some of the stuff we're doing, it doesn't make sense. So maybe the actual solution doesn't make sense. And so what I'm saying is, like, what are some of the things, what are some of the incentives that we could offer people to help themselves? Now, I gave a little scenario when I mentioned, like, the corner stores and offering it as a franchise opportunity. So now you would have a brother or sister who wants to invest, who who wants to get in business, don't really know how. You know, franchises usually provide some degree of safety because they have the operations, the order of operations. And then it would be helping the community because, like I said, we would take a portion of the franchise fee to reinvest in the community resource center. But that's one idea. What are some of the other things that we can do and maybe some things that don't require, like, that type of large investment? Does anyone have any ideas or do I sound off base? Because I truly believe, like, that's, like, one of the solutions. Okay. So no one has any thoughts on that. All right. Well, I'll tell you this. If I'm going to be here by myself, if everyone is good, then we can end the call because I can't do this alone if I don't have any participation. All right. Brother Vaughn, put the cape on. Save the day. All right. There you go, Brother Vaughn. Go ahead, brother.
It's a complicated situation or a complicated because on one hand, like you said, to attract somebody else, to attract somebody, like what most people use is money. And oh my goodness, like real life it happens. So it's like, I know everybody on the call knows that the more money they got, the more people they know. So it's like money is just period. So, but it's like also success attracts people.
Yeah.
So
yep.
Even
people love winners. Yep.
Right. Even if it's at the point like we don't have to first be at the point to where it's like we gonna give you something. It's we just gotta be successful. We have to do something that's successful, that's moving up, and people see that, and that'll attract a lot of people because you know we're gonna get it's people say they leaders, but it's way more followers than it is leaders, mm-hmm. And you can build a leader, like you can make a leader out of somebody, but it's hard to like decipher like which is which off like when you first meet somebody you can't really tell if they are or if some people you can, but a lot of people can fake it, you know, long enough to get to a point where they can destroy something because they really ain't a leader and you thinking they are. But
right.
Like it's hard to tell at that, like to begin with. But when you just successful when you do something in a successful manner, because that brings about the attraction of people and people want to know like how you do that, how you get to that point, and to be open with it. Like
set an example. You're talking about setting an example.
Right. That's what we doing. Like we set right. This example and we gonna give this example to you. We ain't turning our back. Oh, you wanna know how we did it? This how we did it. Like, yeah. Right. And tell your friends. You know somebody who knows how to do it, and you know what I mean. So and like, cause word of mouth do a whole lot, and it's like, it's like I say, it's so tricky right there, cause it's like okay, you could say we gonna want to do this or we gonna want something particular, but it's like. We gotta have success before we can even like get to that point for real. Because if we start saying we're gonna do something for people, where like you know revenue.
I get it. You. I mean, we have to form the example. We have to show them. We have to show them what's going on first, right? Right. And I know a lot of that plays a part in who we are in terms of our. You know, I guess cultural heritage or what it is, right? So we like a lot of assurance before. Well, most of us, we like to be sure, We like to see exactly what it is that we're going to get. We don't like to be on shaky ground. And that's why I was saying, you know, maybe dangle the carrot. It was just the thought that I was saying.
Right.
And so, like, one of the things, well, you know, now we got a bunch of people in the queue, so now I'm not even going to start. I'll wait for the end. So now we got a bunch of people in the queue. So, I mean, you set it off, Brother Vaughn. You put the cape on, brother. I appreciate you stepping out there. So
I wasn't going to let you get away like that. We weren't about to go out like that. Nah, I live for this now. Y'all crazy.
That's
type of confidence to go off. It's just me and you, Kyle.
That's what's up, brother. All right, cool. Thank you, man. But all right, so essentially you're saying set the example. All right, got it. And that's excellent. All right, cool. Caller from 832 area code. Then get your first name. Caller from 832.
Hi, Brother Lewis. This is Latasha Moore. I'm a new member. I just joined early this week.
Excellent. Welcome aboard.
One question is, I haven't received my email from you yet.
Haven't?
You know, to get out there.
I'm sorry, you said Sister Latasha?
Yes.
Okay, got you. If you did not receive, check your spam folder, please. And then if you still do not have it, then reach out to me through the contact form on the website, and then I will take care of whatever needs to be taken care of.
Okay, thank you. But I do have a question, a response. Like you stated, we do know, I think black people do know money is power, but how can I put this delicately? Well, truthfully, black
don't
people,
put it
most black people
don't
know.
Put it delicately. Tell us, give it to us straight, sister. Give it to us straight.
Okay. Black people know that money is power. However, and even though I was just telling my friend Tashana today, when it's more dangerous for people to have a little knowledge versus no knowledge or the whole picture of the whole picture of the knowledge. So even though we know that money is power, we feel like because we don't make enough money that we truly don't have power. But in actuality, we do. Because even though we don't make enough, we don't make a lot of money, some of us don't make a lot of money, we still have power because we're still out there spending money. And
yes.
It's like they call it like a catch 22.
Right. Well, I'll tell you like this. So there are some people who I hear, they're black, quote unquote, leaders, activists, or whatever. And they're like, I'm getting sick and tired of all these people saying black people got money and black people got power. They don't got no money. They don't got no power. That 1.3 million, they just spending it. And I'm like, hey, my man, like, what do you think this economy is based on? Our GDP is based off mostly spending. That's what the power of America is. Like, mm-hmm. And we're the biggest cohort of that. Like, what is wrong with you? That is massive power. That's why America go around pushing the rest of the world around, because we're the biggest market. I'm like, I don't get it. If we were to reserve a bit of that and just use it for investment, I'm telling you, I should have researched it. I looked it up before. There's this psychological or, you know, like a phenomenon, a weird thing. If you start taking like a little bit of money away from what you're doing, I think it's called Moore's Law or something like that. If you take a little bit of money away from what it, some way, somehow, you will figure out how to live the same way you're living with just that small little bit less. So you can pull, and I mean like you can take like 10% away from your monthly income, 20% or something. Some way, somehow, you'll figure out how to live the way you want to live on that aid. You will adapt. And that's kind of sort of what we need as a people. But what happens is because we don't have a culture of saving, because we don't have a culture of, successfully investing our money in different things, a system needs to be set up automatically for us. Like, it has to be built into the way that we do things. Kind of sort of like how the Jewish community, they have like their yeshiva schools and their synagogues, right? the people, the Jewish community, they pay a membership to be part of, like, the synagogue. And that goes, and so because, and that's a cultural thing. So every household, they know, I'm living in this area. I'm going to pay this money to this particular synagogue. I'm going to send my kids to this yeshiva school. The synagogue, the school, and all the other different institutions that they culturally support takes care of the social, takes care of some of the other social things. And then, of course, it doesn't hurt that, you know, Jewish people are good at business. So,
Here's the irony. Thanks for mentioning the Jewish culture. Here's the irony. A lot of people do already take 10% of their income and invest into our black churches. So they may feel like, hey, I'm already investing in something into our culture because, you know, Baptist most likely, especially, Baptist mostly. In the South, it's mostly Baptist. So they take their 10%, and, for example, my mom faithfully take her 10% and put it into church, faithfully. Mm-hmm. You would probably have to, she'd probably have to be on her deathbed, and I think she'll still do her 10% at the church. Mm-hmm. So we as black people, most of the people in the South, they do take 10% of their income, and they do invest it into what they think is, you know, a culture, which is like our Baptist community. But unfortunately, they're really not getting no return. They're getting a return, but they're not getting like additional help, or they're really not seeing their money work for them in a sense that they take the 10%, and most people feel like, well, this 10% is just to help the pastor keep the church open, you know, and, you know, it's no monetary gain that way. So we are already working with 90% of income.
Right.
And so to tell that same person, well, take 20% and put it over here, I'm not saying it's hard, but it's not going to be easy.
No, right. And I'm not even saying that either. I'm saying when you go to the store and go buy the milk and the cereal and the bread and whatever it is, a portion of that, there are systems in place where a portion of that can actually come back to benefit your community, benefit you. So, I mean, a perfect example, right? There's this site. This is basically the business that I'm talking about modeling. It's called eBay, right? You go, you buy something online, and you get cash back. They give you back a portion of the money that you spent. That's essentially that company did $2 billion. So now what I am saying is if we're able to engineer that type of relationship with all different types of businesses because we have the power of the black spending dollars, right? Because we have the power of the black wallet, we're able to say, listen, we're going to send, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 customers. So in the agreement, the thing that I was working towards, the threshold is 5,000 customers per different business that they want. They want 5,000 customers. If we're able to tell them, listen, we're going to send 5,000 people your way, they're willing to give us a kickback. They're willing to give us a commission. So, and that doesn't require anyone to do anything. You want a toaster? Go ahead, sister, go shop. Go get your toaster. The portion of that will come back to the organization, and now the organization can go and start investing and creating the things that need to be done. And that's why, you know, at the beginning of the call, and I don't know if you caught that, I said that, you know, we need three things in a black community. We need the economic power, the political power, and we need an organization that's going to structure all of this. It needs to be a trusted organization. That's really what we don't have. We don't have an organization that actually lives and breathes to just work and do right for the people. Everyone is focused on how much can I get, what do I do personally, you know, all of these other different types of things. We need one organization to be true to us for the things that need to be done. I know that once we get that, I know we're going to get retarded support from the black people. The people who are working in these organizations, because see, now this is the other thing too. So now we got a lot more people in the queue. But here's the thing what I noticed, right, when black people have, like, organizations. When black people have organizations, they believe that everybody in the organization should, like, be volunteer. They don't believe people should be, like, getting paid. Specifically, I work with a lot of black nonprofits. They believe everybody no one should be getting paid. Now, I also work with other nonprofits too. The director, if you go do the research on the Goodwill people, there's regional CEOs, regional directors, the regional guys. They make $240,000 a year, $400,000 a year. Like, these people are getting paid. So there's no reason for these people to even steal. It's like, yo, we could just run the thing the way it's supposed to be because, I mean, I'm good. That's why I said, you know, people actually need to get paid to go do the work. Because if you have a director or someone who it's known this guy gets paid $100,000, $200,000, he gets enough to keep the lights on in his house, you know, keep his kids looking good or whatever it is, there's no reason for him to go dipping his hand in a cookie jar. And I don't see any maybe I'm not that well researched on it. I don't see any black organizations that are set up that way, like that are set up in reality is what I'm saying, like set up in economic reality. AARP, the NRA, all these other big civic organizations, go look up the type of compensation their board members and the regional directors and, you know, supervisors and managers, those people, they get paid. That's how they keep their hands out of the cookie jar. That's how they keep the mission on task. That's how these organizations become powerful. That's the same thing in the Jewish community. This is how they're able to have the yeshiva school. The rabbi guy and the assistant rabbi guy, if he has to teach math or if he has to teach gym, guess what? He gets a teacher salary. He's not just doing it from the goodness of his heart. People got bills to pay. This is America. But sister, we went on too long. Now it's a bunch of people in here. I don't want to be respectful of other people's time. Listen, but welcome aboard. We thank you for your support.
No,
and,
thank you.
And like I said, reach out to me personally if there's anything. The welcome email, though, check your spam folder first. If it's not there, then definitely reach out to me.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
Yep, have a good one, sister.
You too.
Sister T. Sister? All right, it's heating up. Good. We got a good one tonight. We got enough people that can take us kind of far. Sister T, I don't know. I know she said she had her phone on mute because she had.
I'm here.
Okay, what's going on, sister?
Brother Lou?
Yes.
I just want to thank you because you are faithful in this call and your mission in this movement. And I'm really grateful to be a part of it. The possibilities are endless, and you speak to the possibilities. And that's what we need. And I see the tipping point of the shifting of minds in our community. So if we keep inviting people, one of my experiences, this just came straight out of heaven. One of my experiences in this community is that we will tell somebody that we caught that sale yesterday versus the sale is tomorrow. So what I'm saying is that we need to tell people about what's happening down the road and not what has already occurred and they missed out. You know what I mean? Inviting people to this call is important, and I know that you make a call for that. I don't know if it sticks and we get off the phone, get back in our lives, and we don't invite people, but I know that my 20-year-old granddaughter is on this call tonight, and so is her high school sweetheart. I'm waiting to be able to call him fiance. He's already my son in love. One day he might be my son-in-law. But they're on the call, and they're young people.
Right.
And so everything that we need is in the room, in the spaces that we occupy. But we need to look at them differently and how we can invite people to a team. Folks offer their skills, talents, and gifts. It's already been done. It's not like rocket science. Everything that you're talking about has already been done. It just needs the well-oiled wheel are like-minded people like you're pulling together on these calls. I haven't heard anybody ask about who's in charge of the money in a long time, and I prayed about that. When will we get past that part? It's $10 a month. You spend more of that on BS. You know what I mean? And step up your game if you can do 25 and 50. I told you, Brother Lou, I'm paying for the year. I'm not doing that monthly stuff. You know, it's important. You're on the right track. You have a good team of people that are on the calls regularly, and folks will be able to see the shift. It's just about a mind shift. And we've been buying, but we're going to focus on buying over here, and we're going to choose trust. And we're going to stop talking about my experience in the black community business is, or offer feedback. If a brother or a sister falls short, pull their coattails like the OGs used to say, pull their coattails. Give them feedback. Tell them. Some of them, the majority of them, will listen. And the hard-headed ones, the Bible speaks of it, the fools ain't going to listen no way. So you just keep it moving. And I appreciate the opportunity to share this evening, Brother Lou, and keep it moving.
Thank you so much, Sister Teak. I appreciate it. All right. Next, we have Brother Leonard. Brother Leonard.
How you doing, Brother Lou? And I just heard you, Teak, and all the brothers and sisters and kings and queens are on the call. And welcome the new sister. I think her name was LaShondra.
Latasha. Sister Latasha.
Latasha. Well, welcome aboard. Yeah, pretty much what you're talking about is that you'll find we all feel the same way. And many of these calls in a lot of ways are therapeutic. But as we continue to have these calls, we'll start moving in a direction. And once the members and the founding members agree on one or two things to focus on, such as you were talking about the franchise, everything that you're talking about, other cultures do. And you know my position on that. But then the question is, why aren't we there? And we already understand kind of like why we aren't there, but much of this organization, we're going to find ourselves teaching many of our people the direction that we're going in. Because if we were already successful and we already had this thinking process, we would be talking about other things. So as I stated before, what you're talking about and what people are hearing, and kind of piggyback on what Teak said, and a lot of us have this conversation, just stay focused on the blueprint. Continue to have these calls, but we are going to have to be very, very, very patient, because how many years did it take for our people to get or not to get where they are? We almost have to ask ourselves, are we 50 years behind every culture? Are we 100 years behind? Are we a century behind? And at some point...
I think I seen something. So we're like 200, like in order to catch up like with that wealth gap, I think it's 200 and something years. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, is that right? Yeah.
Right.
Crazy.
But a couple of things that we want to look at is... when I studied other cultures, one of the things that I did in the study is I asked them, be honest with me about your perception about black people. Now, before they answer, because they clearly have an opinion and they clearly have a perception.
Uh-huh.
And the one group that I'm talking about is the Chinese person. And what they said, their perception, and they talk among themselves, black people are crybabies. That's their perception. Because, see, long as you and I talk about each other, we're viewed as hating each other. But if you go ask another culture what they feel, it may help you start to see things a little differently. Because how could the Muslims, the Arabs, the Koreans come in our neighborhood, buy our convenience stores, and we go spend our money there? I mean, they got a bunch of drug dealers in the neighborhood could buy a convenience store.
They are the ones that prop up, hold up, stay in front of the place and everything and run inside. And, I mean, they spend at least $50 a day in the store running in buying Dutches and juices and potato chips and sandwiches and all kinds of stuff. I mean, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So after I had my little feelings hurt, because I hated hearing that they see you black people as crybabies, but after I calmed down, that's exactly what they are. Because here's the thing. Why don't we do what other cultures do? I mean, think about that for a minute. So then the question is, okay, who's out here leading it? Right now, Black Wallets Matters, in my opinion, is probably the best organization right now, but it's going to take us some time to get to where we need to go. But there was a point I was trying to make, and it had to do this is what I wanted to say. My point wasn't I'll get off because you said the phone is lit up. What we have to do is evaluate ourselves. And what do? We spend money. We like to party. We like to go out and eat. And we like to make sure our nails are done. Now, my wife and I talk about this enough. So why don't we have nail shops? Why don't we buy clubs? Because you can talk to hell freeze over, but you're not going to stop no brother and sister. When they get their money on Friday,
they're going
to the club. They're going to the clubs, okay? All the venues that have concerts, that have jazz, restaurants, those are the things that we need to look at. Where do we spend our money and get in there, and then that becomes our money. And then because they don't know to recycle black dollars, before you know it, the black dollars are in our community longer than 6 hours. Why? Because we own those businesses. So those are some of the things that we want to kind of look at. But anyway, I just wanted to encourage you and welcome the sister.
I'll tell you this, and again, excellent, excellent observation. So first of all, yep, 100%. You are 100% correct. In regards to what other people think about us, even white people, that's what they always say. Oh, you go complain. You got affirmative action. You got welfare. You got da 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 da. You know, you hear black people, they say things like, "Yeah, but we had slavery," and I'm being honest with you, and I hate excuses. But as I've done research, I realized that fear, psychological trauma, and all these other kinds of different things, poverty mindsets and things like that, these things are actually transferred from generation to generation. But the biggest thing is, the crack epidemic. I mean, and I'm talking about in my lifetime. I witnessed it.
Right.
People were crazy, right? And then what we have right now is the byproduct of basically a whole community who had like half of their, not a half, but maybe like about a third or at least like 20% of their community was crazy. Like, every single one of us knows a crackhead and probably had a crackhead in our family. Like, we know, and there was, like, some crazy things going on. What we are witnessing now is the after effects of that, right? And I'm not trying to say use this as an excuse. So for your business part that you said, that is the solution. If no one on this call understands that, let me reiterate what the brother said. We're not going to change nobody's mind from going to parties. We're not going to go stop nobody from going out to eat, getting their hair or their nails done, going to. So I actually had some notes prior, for this call. And is we need to be in essential industries. We need to be in industries that our people are going to do. Hell can freeze over, and they're still going to go. The recession, all that stuff was going on. People still were going out. Black folks still buying BMWs and Benzes and Lexuses and cars, and houses, and going to get their hand and nails did and whatever else when the country was in a full-blown recession. The reason why is because the vast majority of well-to-do black folks are, like, in government jobs and city jobs and things like that that aren't really affected by the economy. The other half of our economy is an all-cash economy. It's that street economy. And I don't know why nobody ever talks about it. I don't know. Listen, that economy is crazy. That black market, that pure cash economy that's ours, it is in the billions. It is in the billions. And that is ours. The money, so we may not agree with that brother hustling or whatever it is, but if we get that money, that is our asset, because that's exactly how those Arabs think. That's exactly now there's, well, it's not now, this has been years. There's been Israelis, around my area. They are opening up luxury car dealers in the hood. And I'm talking about, like, Bentleys and, freaking Ferraris. And right now I've seen, like, a Bentley truck they got. This is in the hood. And guess what? Dudes are going in there buying them. They done figured it out. Maseratis and all of this, like, down the street from the project. And dudes are buying them. There's money in the hood. That's our money. That's our money. We have to figure out how to harness it. I'll tell you how. I'll tell you what it looks like. It's some kind of entity where when some black folks put their money in it, they could trust that their money is good, and then they see the investment. That's essentially what it is. I speak with Sister Shauna, Brother Cujo, and there's some other people. I talk about what are some of these entities that can be done now. We have some challenges in terms of how people understand how investment works. There also are some challenges in regards to what we actually have to do as a company with those profits, right? Because we're not talking about taking the profits and just redistributing them amongst the investors, right? Because that's what a traditional business structure would be. We're talking about taking a portion of the profits and reinvesting in our community. And what happens is, if you ever look at some of these lawsuits against some of these companies, their mandate is to maximize shareholder value. If they mismanage shareholder funds and things like that, they shut the company down, lock up the CEO, lock up the people, all of that stuff. You're talking about you got an Enron and all other kind of craziness going on. That's what usually happens. So it's kind of hard to do the thing that we want to do. That's my challenge in trying to figure out how to structure this thing, because we need people to invest, but it can't be like the normal type of investment. You're not going to, like, get rich. We're not going to build this thing up to, a couple of hundred million and then break you off your piece. The money has to stay in there. The other thing, too, is the share, the ownership. It has to stay all black, man. I can't even say it no easier way. The ownership has to remain. It has to remain amongst the brothers and sisters. Now, if you want to pass it along to your kids and all of that stuff, and we were actually looking at some trust, setting up trust, and maybe there's some way. And so at you being an owner of you being an owner of a certain percentage or whatever, maybe there's some kind of distributions we can pay or what, but it's, all of that stuff is kind of like above my pay grade. I'm just kind of like researching, thinking about it. Because usually when I do business, I own it. I do what I want to do with it. You can't do that when you take investors' money. So that's the challenge. All right, Brother Leonard, thank you for chiming in.
All right.
Let's see here. We got Brother Dennis, Sister Shauna, Sister Mai, and Sister Lola. Brother Dennis, welcome.
Hey, brother. How you doing today?
All right. Peace.
Peace. I have a plethora of questions. Some are not fit for the platform. Some may be more fitting for a more personal call or some other time frame. But as far as this platform goes, a lot of what I'm looking at is, number one, organizing. Me coming from a military background, I understand when we have a so-called an enemy that we are trying to take territory from, a lot of what needs to happen in warfare is the element of surprise. And that needs to be seriously considered in this attack. So I'll give an example. We cannot surprise an enemy that owns the platforms in which we communicate in to devise a plan to attack them. That's one school of thought to take in consideration that I've seen. The next thing is that the federal notes that we have is going to be obsolete pretty soon. I will not advise our people to use cryptocurrency because it's digital, and that's not going well. The only way that we really can have an insurance for ourselves, so to speak, outside of a system that never did like us anyway, is we have to go back to the earth and use hard assets of gold, silver, precious stones, like we did before, our previous ancestors did. That is the only way, because as I analytically study the matrix, and I'll just use that for while I'm on the call, they are buying that and backing it up themselves because they understand that the paper currency is not going to be worth too much more longer. Now, it may shock some people that may not know that. I'm not assuming everybody understands that, but I would just put it out there for food consumption. That is known in certain circles. And me working for the federal system for almost two decades, I have a little bit of insight on that. Some I can't talk about on this call because it would be national security and other stuff would happen, and we're not going to go there. The way the organization is structured so that way you won't get overtasked, i.e. on the calls and so forth, has to do with more infrastructure of the organization as a whole, how the organization is structured, and then build other legal layers within the infrastructure of the company or/organization to protect itself against any legality or any infiltration of the organization, i.e. Martin Luther King and others, Malcolm X, how they have gotten taken care of by infiltration. That is a very real thing. Me, once again, coming from a military perspective, I understand that the enemy will send people that look like us to infiltrate to try to be a cancer from the inside out. So that needs to be addressed and have measures in place for that. The biggest thing is of our people as a whole, as indigenous Americans that we are, is that re-education of the people, the indigenous people that's here, and how, and at the same time, do and implement what you're talking about so that way we can move forward in a way that we're using the same blueprint that the other sister eloquently spoke earlier this evening about using current platforms in place that they have, but putting ours, but using it for our benefit and reversing the curse process that is on us right now. And I'll pause for your feedback.
So a lot of the things that you're saying are very, a lot of those things have actually been considered. I do understand that you were invited by a sister, so I don't think you had a chance to watch the blueprint that's on our website. We kind of like addressed a lot of the things, a lot of the concerns that you have in regards to, you know, some of the infiltration issues, you know, in regards to communication, in regards to the using the precious metals as they're going right now, right? So I keep my finger on the pulse of like what's going on with the economy. You know, I do know, like, you know, a lot of right wing people, a lot of preppers, I know those guys, they are really talking about, yep, we're going to go back to, you know, we need the precious metals and, you know, this, that, and the third, we got to go back to the silver and gold and all of that stuff. That's a real highbrow conversation, you know, not really appropriate for this particular call. In terms of the things that you know from your experience, your perspective, in terms of, you know, how the government operates and things like that, I can't comment on that, right? Because obviously I have no knowledge of that. I'm not in that arena. But in terms of the element of surprise, what we do have right now that we can use as the element of surprise is that these white folks are fighting each other like crazy right now. They're divided. You have the leftists against the right-wing people and the snowflakes and the, you know, all the, and the Trump-tards and whatever else is going on. You have all of that going on in the country right now. This would be the best time for black folks to get their act together and move forward. We've said that on these calls multiple times. We're trying to sound the alarm. We were going out there. We're trying to, you know, make the rallying calls and things like that. The sad truth is, it's like what Brother Leonard said, most of the brothers and sisters are just concerned with having a good time getting by. Waking our folks up to make everyone, you know, move on one accord or whatever it is, it has never happened. It has never happened for our people. I personally don't feel that that's the way it's supposed to be anyway, because if you ever look at any, if you just look at the world just isn't like that. There are always people who are just, you know, they just have their head down, and those people are just meant to just, like, do the grunt work. There are always some people at some other level just sitting there making the plans, designing the structures, like you said, the matrix, right? So there are those of us who have taken the red pill. There are those of us who are looking at it, and we see what it is. It's not meant for everyone to see what it is, because that's how you get words like special and exceptional, right? We have to be different. So what we are looking for within this organization when we have these calls, we are just sifting and sorting and weeding and trying to find like-minded brothers and sisters, those who really understand what's going on. So again, like I said, like you were talking about implementing the system, something like how the sister was saying, right? The blueprint of this organization, like that is the system. The stuff that I was talking about, it's a whole, it's, you know, like I said, I'm not pulling it out of my ass, you know, like this stuff is documented, you know, point A to point Z. We have it on the website. You can check it out. You sound like someone who would really enjoy it, you know, in terms of the facts and the figures and the numbers that back that up. And that's really what we're doing. It's not, we don't expect everyone to come on board. Actually, when you watch the blueprint, you'll see it says we only need like 2 or 3% of the people. So as Brother Vaughn, who actually set off this great conversation, as he said, there has to be a group of us to actually set that example. So first, what we have to do is set the organizational example. And so what we have learned from operating this organization and interacting, what we realize is that we have like some inter-organizational hurdles as a people, because outside of church, we really don't have a lot of other black civic organizations. Like we don't really interact with each other like that on that level. I mean, you have motorcycle groups, right? You have motorcycle groups and you have other things, but those are all external things for us to focus on, right? So it's like if a motorcycle has a certain engine in it, right? It's like either I like the engine or I don't like the engine, but it doesn't matter. There's really no opinion. I mean, there's like it's a 1300cc engine, right?
Right.
There's no dispute in that. With, you know, what we find with people in the black community is like, okay, cool. Well, what do you think is the biggest problem? So most people say it's unity, but then you got other people who say it's mental health. And then you got other people who saying it's, you know, no fathers in the home and it's prison and pipeline and it's poverty and it's unemployment. And it's like, so it's so many different layers, so many different factors to our problems. As I understand it, they're all money problems. They're all money problems. They're all money problems. You can take it. If you got enough money, you can solve almost like 90% of the problems we have. The money has to be directed. And so then when you sit down, most black folks, when they sit down and they say, well, where's the money? They go and they look to our celebrities and all of that stuff and be like, oh, they got the money. Give us. No, what about looking at what you have right in front of you?
Right.
How about you, you know, and then I realize nobody wants less. Nobody wants to give up. No, oh, I don't have enough. Nobody wants to give what they have. But what I
have a Robin Hood mentality.
Well, I don't know. Well, I mean, Robin Hood was like taking.
What I mean by what you were talking about, like what I mean within the community, they have that Robin Hood mentality of, let me get it from quote unquote the celebrities or the wealthy or the wealthy of us.
Yeah, and give it
to the poor type deal when all necessarily you we have enough discretionary income, even in our, quote, here in the American platform, we have enough discretionary income in our lower income families that is higher than the world, than what the UN numbers have, that are higher than impoverished third world countries and most other countries that are, quote, they're considered poverty. So we have the income, like you were alluding to, it just needs to be channeled in a proper dynamic.
Right, exactly. And that, and so what I believe is that it just has to be the proper vehicle. So through the example I gave, like with the corner stores and, right, you know, setting up a franchise thing, what I didn't say was that also solves our problem of distribution. Because, see, one of the other problems is we don't manufacture anything, we don't distribute anything, but we consume everything. If we automatically start cornering the market for, like, the corner stores, the convenience stores, we could actually start putting in our own brand of cakes, potato chips, juice, whatever it is we want. And the thing about it, the people in the hood don't leave the hood to shop. So if you put, you know, Black Guys potato chips in the hood, guess what? Bunch of kids are going to start eating Black Guys potato chips. They're going to start drinking Black Guys, you know, soda and milk and juice and whatever else we put in there. That's using existing consumer behavior to our advantage. And that's another brother and sister who now you're in a larger business. You're in a manufactured good business. Those industries, if you look at those, are ginormous businesses, billions of dollars.
Correct.
And so it just takes a small. So now these are all great ideas, right? Everything is a great idea, but ideas are nothing without action. And I'm telling you, the problem, right, ideas are nothing without action, and ideas and action is nothing without the right kind of money, because you're not going to be able to do anything too long, especially since most of us have no experience doing some of the things that we're talking about, right?
Well, yeah, to go with what you're saying as well, so here's the outside looking in, the dome. The problem with what I see is the huge problem already is that let me play an advocate in this way. The money is transferring. However, the duality of that, parallel to that as well, I go back to my other comment, was education, because people perish for lack of knowledge. So if they don't have knowledge of manufacturing, knowledge of all of these skill sets that we used to have in our bloodline that have been lost due to the industrial revolution and the technology revolution, we have to re-educate just in that sense so they can make money, what, to take care of themselves by the sweat of the brow. But at the same time, they also have to implement understanding culture, who you are as a culture, as well as understanding financials to political platforms and et cetera.
Well, now I know you were on the beginning of the call. So those community resource centers that we spoke about, that is where that stuff will take place. That is where, right? So when those brothers and sisters in those communities, when they walk out their front door, this is where you go. You don't hang out on the street. You don't get in trouble. You go inside here, and here's where you learn, you know, about your heritage. Here's where you learn, you know, here's where you learn respect,
right, of course,
for Black folks. Here's where you learn, you know, computer programming. Here's where you learn welding and electricity and, you know, whatever else it is. Here's where you go get training to get your CDL and all. I mean, bro, watch the blueprint, bro. You'll see all of that stuff is all inclusive. But that's the byproduct, right? So all of that comes after we have the businesses humming along, cranking out the profit, cranking out the money that we need. And, you know, like I said, all of these things is negligible. It's small. I study some of the largest civic and social and, you know, ethnic organizations in the country prior to even conceiving any of this stuff. and the margins are there. The existing systems and business, it's all there. The only thing is all that money is just going to one or two families, making them obscenely rich. And we don't need that within the black community. All we need to do is pay our directors good. They will do their jobs. They can live a good life, and no one will put their hands in the cookie jar. And now that's it. Now the black community has an infrastructure in place that will carry it forward. And by the time these white folks wake up, we will have organized our votes. We will have organized our legal and political protections. And now it will be a problem. Because what I do understand is it's no more really black and white. It's the corporatocracy versus the rest of us. That's what it is. So what we need to be focused on is protecting our own. It just so happens that there's a lot of white people, like now, because, I mean, it's just not even regular white people anymore. It's all kinds of, you know, it's
well,
like
there's all kind of diverse, yeah, all kind of diversification.
Yeah. And so you are aware of that. But, brother, we do, like I said, the call has started hopping. We got a bunch of people in the queue right now.
I thank you guys for your time as well. I really do appreciate it. Like I say, I didn't want to get everything out because it's unfair to everybody on the call, but thanks again.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, you can definitely reach out to me behind the scenes, man, and we can build, brother. All right. Sister Mai.
Good evening.
Peace, everyone. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm well.
Okay. So generally, well, I'll just be true to form and I'll talk fast as usual and try to just get a lot out of respect for other people's time, as the previous brother said as well. But I do have several things, so I'll get to it. The first thing you mentioned and kind of started the Q&A session with was talking about or questioning what we thought about paying people to grow the organization, and you know, just what is if that's the motivator, which we know that money is definitely the number one, you know, motivator. And then Brother Vaughn came on saying that he thinks besides money that success would be a motivator once we do something and we prove that we're successful. My first question was kind of to him, what does success look like to him? Because most people perceive success as money. So I just was really curious if you can unmute him and let him tell me what that looks like. But prior to that, let me just get the rest of it out. Because I think money, I mean, I agree in part that we need to pay people to get certain things done, but I think for the most part, a bigger draw would be maybe like what Sister Teek said, basically community, just showing that, just speaking out, reaching out to your friends and family, talking to people, not being afraid to the people you know. If everybody talks to everybody that they know about what's going on and basically show that there is unity on this group and, you know, say that, just talk about the kind of conversations we have and the activities we do on the members' calls. I think that within itself is intriguing, and people have been very, very engaged in those conversations and in those activities that we do. And that just draws us closer together and instills trust, I believe, in our community among people that we don't even know, we've never even seen. Face-to-face for the most part. Most of us are across the country. So those just engaging in those type of activities with people we already know, like, and trust, and then you bring in those people that you already know, like, and trust because they're like-minded, and then, just introduce them to other people. I just feel like that's a way that we can grow without money in terms of the organization. What I think we should buy, however, things that I think we should invest in as a group also to help grow the organization financially are things like debit card companies where we enable people to turn their cash or whatever the form of currency is going to be into plastic, because that's where, I see this country going. I mean, my husband and I were traveling last week, and, in certain hotels, they only accept cards. now. In a vending machine for a bottle, a dollar of water, you cannot put cash in it. They want in a card, you know, and it's been a while now that you can use cash on airplanes. You can only use cards. You know, you can't rent cars without cards, you know. So, and a lot of people, like you said, in the hood, there's $1 billion just cash laying around. You know, they don't want to be traced or tracked, but I feel that that's a serious market that we can somehow create a company that will basically still allow them to not be tracked, so to speak, or and not have to have that debit card or credit card tied to a bank account, but where it's just kind of like a prepaid thing, but it's not considered prepaid to where they can really use that card, you know what I mean, everywhere without having their information checked. So anyway, that's just an idea I had about something we can invest in.
I'll just tell you real quick. So that's kind of sort of like what Russell Simmons was trying to do, like way back in the day. I mean, I used to read Source Magazine. I remember that Rush card came out. You got to remember though, like, so part of what this organization wants to do is we don't want to fight the system. We want to use what, like, so here's the thing. You don't see the Arabs or the people in the beauty supply store saying, you know what, we need to change the way you black people pay. No, they go and they put an ATM inside the spot because realistically speaking, like that, like the brother said, that money is totally unaccounted for. That money is, it's staggering. I am telling you, the amount of money is staggering. Just go and like read some of the bust that you hear like in Baltimore, right? So Baltimore is supposed to be an insanely impoverished place, and you know, I got cousins and family out there. It's crazy out there in Baltimore with all those boarded up houses. Read when the cops run into these dudes' crib, they take $700,000 out of a dude's crib. A dude went. They caught him. He was walking around with like $63,000. They pulled another guy over in the car. He had like $500,000. That's cash in his crib. In his car, right? So when those brothers, if they don't want to use their card, if that's how they got to move, who are we to complain and whatever? All we want to do is, like Brother Leonard said, we want to sell them. You want to go to the club? Hey, brother, come in there. Buy out the bar. Go ahead and do you. You want to put some 30-inch rims on your car? You want to rent rims? Here you go. Here you go, brother. Go ahead and do it. Because see, then the money that we collect, we get, you know, our money is clean. They're doing what they're doing. That's something we will never change. The federal government can't figure out a way to stop that. They done had a war on whatever. Let them have what they're saying. I don't think.
No, what I'm saying.
I do understand. I do understand. You're saying help
I'm
a lot
saying
of them who are unbanked.
The system.
Huh?
Yeah.
No,
they I'm
don't
saying
want
comply
to,
with
though.
The system.
No, but they don't
but
want
not,
to.
But not in the sense, because again, they don't want to be traceable. That's the whole point. They don't want, like I said, that's why it's not tied. We wouldn't tie it to a bank account where we have all their information.
But as a money transmission person, as us doing whatever we have to do, as a money transmission person, you got to do it. That's what's happening with cryptocurrency. You don't see what's happening right now with cryptocurrency. Everybody is all crazy. Oh, it's going to be anonymous. It's going to be
untraceable. Right.
They just right. Yeah, it's not. They just say it's a commodity. You got to claim it on your taxes. You got to do this. Coinbase. You got to go send it. You got to send in a copy of your ID and social security and what are you crazy? I'm like, wow. Yeah, no, let's don't even.
So you're saying you don't think the system would allow it? Like we would not be able to buy the radar of the government in terms of doing
no,
that.
No, unless we want to go to jail.
But I'm saying if we had, I just feel like if we had our own and it wasn't, it basically did not interact with theirs. But anyway, okay, move on to the next idea.
Okay, go ahead.
The gold and silver and precious metal investment that the previous brother mentioned, I have mixed thoughts about that too because I feel like you can't convert that. Like, you know, I can have a gold bar all day and it can be worth $10,000, but I can't take that to the store and buy milk, you know, or water or whatever, if, you know, and have my basic needs met. So it's not like people – accept that as a form of currency and trade for, you know, your everyday needs. So yeah, that's my thought on that. Having it and passing it down, you know, to eventually somebody can use it when they need it. You know, maybe that'll come sometime in the future. But you'd also mentioned it might be 200 years. I think that we're like 200 years behind the next, you know, other culture in terms of.
Sister Rhonda sent me the exact numbers. Hold on, I'll tell you exactly what it is. If I'm not mistaken, it is 268 years that what we are behind. 268 years, and Forbes projects by 2053, both the Black and Latino communities will be broke. So
let's change that narrative, right? So we know that, and, you know, why go another 260 years, or why just throw our hands up and say, oh, okay, this is what it is, and this is what it's going to be like in 200 years? Why don't we learn how to start passing down, generating and passing down wealth through insurance and through the things that, as long as they are legal and the way they've been doing it for hundreds of years already, and we just haven't been privy to it or, you know, realized it, we can start now. It won't be in our lifetime, but why are we going to try? Why wouldn't we try to help the next 2, 3, 4, 5 generations, you know what I'm saying, catch up and not be in that same position? I just feel like we need to still do something now, definitely for the next generation or two, and we need to continue to teach that. We have to move, you know, at a faster pace, but I believe we can catch up, and it can be done again. Not in our lifetime, but we shouldn't give up. And lastly, in terms of big things right now that this Nielsen rating just came out, specifically about Black people and how they spend their money, I just want to read it really fast. It says, so, you know, current research in the report, Black dollars matter. The sales impact of the Black consumers, the message is clear. While African Americans make up just 14% of the population, we are responsible for some $1.2 trillion in purchases annually. Further, the consumers of color are showing an outsized influence in several key consumer categories and are increasingly demanding that businesses do and be better. In some cases, Black consumers make up over 50% of overall spending, such as the category of dry grains and vegetables. But other categories are standouts as well, like baby food, 42.76%, personal soap and bath needs, 41.64%, and air fresheners and deodorizers, 58.29%. But the big takeaway is the willingness of the smart brands to respond to the needs and the feedback of Black shoppers. Our research shows that Black consumer choices have a cool factor that has created a halo effect influencing not just consumers of color, but the mainstream as well. Meaning, it says these figures show that the investments by multinational conglomerates in research and development to develop products and marketing that appeal to diverse communities is indeed paying off handsomely. But don't try to play if you're not ready. Nielsen's research shows that 58% of African Americans between the ages of 18 and 34 and 41% of those aged 35 and older expect the brands they buy to support social causes, outpacing the total population by 4% and 15% respectively. The data also shows that once Black themed products are leaving the ethnic aisle and finding a wider audience, data also shows that they were once Black-themed products, they're now leaving the ethnic aisle and finding a wider audience. But the process can be fraught. It talks about one particular brand, but I'll go past that because this is just get to the end. With 43% of the 75 million millennials in the U.S. identifying as African-American, Hispanic, or Asian, if a brand doesn't have a multicultural strategy, it doesn't have a growth strategy. So I want to read that to point out the fact that, you know, we always say and we know that white people are watching us, right? They pay attention. They study us more than we study ourselves. They know us better than we know ourselves. They spend millions of dollars just figuring out how to market to us to get our money very successfully. It's like, why aren't we doing the same thing? If we see that they know, they're telling us, it's like we could just take their statistics and their findings. Nielsen is like the biggest, you know, marketer rating company in the United States that I'm aware of because it's been around forever. And so if like this says, we buy mostly vegetables and grains, then why, you know, that's something we should be investing in. and fragrances and bath soaps and stuff. You know, we want to smell good. That kind of thing. Those are also things besides the debit card, you know, that we can be investing in that don't necessarily cost as much money as maybe opening a Ferrari dealership, you know. And to say that and realize that we have the cool factor, you know, everybody wants to be black, but they don't want to be black. You know what I mean? Like, it's true. They realize that everything we do, like he says, has a halo effect. It's very attractive to other people. Other people try to copy everything that we do. And so, you know, it's like we are the creators. We are inventors. We are trendsetters that people copy. So why aren't we just owning and selling these things to ourselves that we know that we like?
Because that is not our culture. Because it's not our culture. That's why.
That just doesn't make sense. It's our culture to create it, to make it all of that, to make it attractive, to make everybody else want it, but not our culture to sell it.
Right.
And that's ludicrous. That makes no sense.
I know, but it's a different side of the brain. Right, it's a different side of the brain to sit down and look at something coldly and passively and be like, I derive value for that. Let me figure out how to commoditize that. Let me figure out how to package that. Let me figure out how to distribute that. It's a total other different side of the brain. It's a total other different culture. Think about our culture. Think about who we are as a people. And then, you know, we got to let other people because there's more people jumping in now. What we do something, it feels good. It can be something of value. What do? We be like, yeah, have it. Yeah, come and share it. We're really generous people. We're really loving people. We don't think cold and calculating.
That's true.
That's not true. Who we are. And business is cold and calculating. So I sit down and I listen and I talk to how people, you know, I sit down, I talk to a lot of folks about business, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, you're in business and you don't even understand business. This is interesting. It's like all you're thinking about is the transaction. You're not thinking about like the customer service as being an intangible part of that value. You're not thinking about in terms of selection, having the different things and being in stock when people come. You're not even factoring that into part of the brand value. It's like, that's interesting. But it's just what we're doing. You know, that's why we're really great in service business, though, right? Because it's like, who are you going to find to put that stank on your hair when you want it, you know, when you want it fly? Your girl, if you're going to do it, she might come to the shop late. But you know, once you get in that chair, she's going to be like, yeah.
You're going to get out of there 3 hours, 4 hours later. But
it's going to be, you it ain't nothing, you know, nobody else could do it like how she do it. So it's a different culture, it's a different way of thinking. That's why it just takes a small group of us to basically reverse engineer and quantify and document and create a system out of what they do for our people, though, right? So we got to figure out, like, how to
put it. They do it for our people, too.
They do it in a way.
The money goes back to them.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, they do it in a way that exploits us. They do it in a way to exploit us. We got to do it in a way where it becomes self-beneficial and self-sustaining. So it's a little different. But thank you, sis. Those are all excellent ideas, all well-researched ideas. I love it. All right.
Peace. Good night, everybody.
Peace. All right, Sister Lola, you are live. Then we have Sister Shauna. Then we have Sister Kim, Brother Jeff, and then Sister T. She probably will be the last one because we are coming close to that 11 o'clock hour. Sister Lola.
Hi, Brother Lou and sisters and brothers. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. I just basically wanted to, I guess, what I had an interest in talking about is like the centering the different programs that we used to have here in our group.
Wait. Now, sister, now you're like breaking up a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Oh, excellent. There you go.
Okay, good. Okay, there were training programs in the city that I live in. I'm from Illinois, but a lot of the when Reagan came. they froze out a lot of them, and, you know, there were freezes, and they never brought them back. Mm-hmm. But what I experienced was, I mean, those programs were great for our community. Now there are none. You just have the unemployment office. But I was down at the bus station yesterday because I had to go pick my car up and saw a lot of just brothers down there. They're allowed to hang out at the bus station. That's something I'm not used to because that never was the case. But it's just, you talk about a lost generation. I mean, they just, it looks like to me, they just don't know where to go, what to do. And, I mean, I know, you know, back in the day, that, you know, everybody used to look out for everybody, and I just don't see that anymore.
Right. Yep. It's called being rudderless. No direction, rudderless, right? And then what has to happen is, so like you say, you've seen those young brothers. So let's say if we had the community resource center, you could just send them right down there. Hey, brother, go down there. As soon as they go in there, there is a process at intake. They would come in. They would be assessed. They would be figuring out what their aptitude, what their interests are, the things that they need, you know, try to point them in some direction. And then they would start, you know, get sifted and sorted and sent where they need. Hey, bro, if you need some help, some remedial math, reading, writing, whatever it is, hey, this is where you go. Hey, you like working with your hands, you're interested in cars, here you go, go down the hall, here's a path, go down there. That brother is going to go down there and teach you how to work on small engines. Hey, what about you? You like playing around with electricity? Yeah, I see the way your hair is looking. You look like you've been shocked a few times. Go down here to the electricity place and go try to figure out how to wire a house. That's what needs to happen.
Absolutely.
That's really what needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And we got to put the, you know, we got to build it. Because, I mean, we can talk about it, but unless we build it for ourselves, it will never come to fruition. And I got it. I mean, I like all of the stuff that I'm saying, it's mapped out. I thought about it. And I know what the problem is. I know that listlessness. I remember that. I remember, I used to live in Far Rockaway, which is a beach town. I remember coming out my door, right, and there's the boardwalk. And there's something to do. I could go and sell stuff on the boardwalk. I could go to the beach. I could chill. When I go to Brooklyn, I walk out my front door, there's nothing to do but get in trouble. Rob somebody, freaking, or go play basketball, or, you know, somebody want to pass you a gun, or somebody want to pass you some drugs. That's it. And that's what happens in a lot of these other communities, and we want to change that.
Yeah.
And we want to change it. And so we got to do whatever we can. If it troubles us to that degree where we're so motivated, then that is exactly what we have to do.
Absolutely. Actually, I have a coworker that I speak to a lot, and we talk about, you know, the issues that we see in the community. And he actually, that's one of his professions. He actually wants to get a group of guys together and show them how to do electricity and HVAC because he has that knowledge. He has that. And, I mean, I'm just so looking forward to get, you know, and I've been asking around, you know, younger guys, are you interested in this? You know, is this something you would like to do? And he said he's willing to teach these guys, you know, just get a group of them together. So, you know, just to let them know that there is more than just hanging out on the street.
Right. Yeah, I know. I see you on all the calls, you know, chilling in the cut. Yeah, I see you.
And I like what you're doing and keep up the good work, and I will continue to be on these calls.
Thank you so much, sister. All right. Sister, wait a minute. That was Sister Shauna, but I don't know. Okay, so Sister Kim.
You muted out, Brother Lou.
I'm muted. I'm sorry?
I said it muted out. I guess when the stop call was connecting, it seems like it goes blank. I can't hear anything. But you got to excuse me. I hope everybody's doing well. I'm really just trying to catch up. I had a personal problem the other day, Tuesday. And with my daughter, I had to jump off the phone. And I feel like I'm trying to come down with
everything. Is everything all right?
Yeah. You know, sometimes some of our kids, you know, they just think they've been here before. You know. Think they've been here before. You know, she birthed me. I didn't birth her. But, you know, she's going to be all right.
Okay.
She's going to be all right. You know, we have to let our grown babies beat sometimes. But, yeah. But, yeah, she had a little procedure this morning, but she's okay. But thank you.
You mean that procedure after you went upside her head? That's what you mean? No.
See, she stays down in Houston, so that's the only reason why. But I had to remind her, you know, if I got to catch a bus, hitchhike, like a fly. Baby, don't make me come choke the life out of you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, make it get right. Snap that neck a little bit, you know, and then it'll be okay. She's okay now. You know, it seemed like you're doing crazy out of mama, but we get some get right. But one of the things that I was going to say, I was noticing I went into the corner store. I dropped in the hood one day. And something just made me happen to look to my right. And, you know, speaking on things that are the money that's in the hood and in our different areas of town, you know, they got these wrap potato chips now.
Yep. With Snoop and all these other kind of people on them. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of got a chuckle. But then when I got my chicken salad, I thought about it because, now, I don't know who's familiar with Dallas, but we got a spot there called Big Daddy. And it's a little corner. But on the outside, it looks so small. But when you go to open there, it's legendary. But for the chicken salad, they are taking and chop it up real good. And then, you know, I thought about it because I went to another area of town. And for what, I had more meat and everything. And then I compared that. I said, now here it is. They're taking something like this and adding more lettuce and less meat, and that's $5. You know, and I just got to thinking about it, how what are the things that we use most in the hood, you know, because there's a lot of them that still don't catch the bus. It's a lot of them that still don't go outside of their town. And like you said, they use those corner stores and those bodegas, and they make a lot of money.
Yes, they do.
And
yes,
it's not just the number in different little other things, you know.
Right.
But those things that you can't get to, and that's not trying to be a know-it-all or anything. And I was listening to what Sister Maya said. I understand what she said, and I remember when the rush cards came out, rush cards. But I also remember year before last or so, there was a big deal about that, about people's cash. So it's still affiliated with the banking and federal banking institutions,
right.
You know.
Yeah, there's no way around it. There's no way around it. You have there's to. No, that's why you, yeah, that's why everyone talks about, you know, getting out of the – I mean, we had that conversation here before. We actually lost a member behind that. When I was like, there's no way opting out of this system. There's no
right.
way. That's what they just did with Bitcoin and all these other cryptocurrencies. Right. They're like, oh, it's going to be anonymous. But no, they just put you right back in the system. The other thing that I wanted to say with the sister and also with the brother when he was talking about the money, I don't even see how people could even think that something that's totally electronic and digital could even be considered seriously as money, because what happens if you don't have any Wi-Fi signal? What happens
exactly.
when, like, what happens if we get hit with, like, an EMP and, like, all the electricity go? You can't spend your money. I was like, that's the stupidest thing in the world. But everybody, oh, it's going to be this. It's going to be, I'm like, they're a lunatic. But
And then you got to, right, excuse me, but I don't even touch y'all. But you have to take into mind, too, you know, there's a lot of sophisticated criminals now. You know, so they're not running up in these places with guns and such, a.k.a. hackers and things. You know,
yeah, I know.
So what good
yeah.
is it going to do you to load your money? And if it's on, you know, floating in space, if a hacker gets a hold of you know, you just got jacked by space. So,
right.
you know, there's, I mean, that's the purpose of us on Thursdays. I don't know, and I wish a lot more. I came in when the new member was speaking. I don't know her name, but welcome, hon. And but I was going to say, these calls are mainly for them to get a flow of what we're doing.
Yeah, right.
But y'all need to get in the house, honey, because it goes down on Tuesdays.
All right. Thank you so much, sister.
Uh-huh.
Let's see here. Who we got? Brother Jeff. We got, it's 11 o'clock, so Brother Jeff, we're going to let Brother Jeff and then Sister Teak, when you get in, we're going to end it with her. All right, Brother Jeff.
Peace. How y'all doing this evening?
Peace.
What's going on now? Going back, we were talking about the, opening, like you said, the clubs and, restaurants or things or whatever, stores or whatever for us. The issue with us is like we're so chained down with our jobs, and we think that the job is our safety net. And it's like we got to get out of that job mentality. And we've been talking about this months ago, but this is the key thing for us, why we can't get free to get these business and things rolling, is because we're locked in these chains of jobs. And it's just like me. I've been doing a job for 24 years. I can't wait to put these chains down. I got 6 more years to be chained down. But I've freed myself by doing real estate and other businesses and things like that, of that nature. But a lot of us don't utilize that part of the game, you know, to free themselves. And that's what doesn't free our blackness. Our blackness is our value, and that's what we don't, you know, as like, you know, as far as we are, you know, as far as money wise, whatever. If you have a job, or if you got working at McDonald's, or if you work for Ford, or whatever it is, you know, your blackness is your value. And like they said, the sister was saying that everything that we do, everybody wants to emulate it, but we don't want to emulate ourselves. And that's something that's been taken from us, has been stripped from us, and we got to understand that it is us. We run in this whole world, but we don't get it. And but everybody else, they've taken everything from us, and they use it, you know, to their advantage. And the other key thing is, we're chained down to this thing, and we're also, all we want to do is be a customer. We're always on the wrong end of the gun. We don't never want to pull the trigger. We always want to take the bullet, and that's the way that we live in. We always want to be a customer to everything. We walk in these party stores. Like you say, you go to these clubs, you go to these restaurants, you go on vacation things, places, things like that nature. It's always somebody else's. It's never ours. We don't own the hotels, none of that stuff. It's always a customer. We're breaking our back for the job, taking our money, customer, instead of creating the bid, you know, Flip the gun around and grab the trigger, and you know, you be the head. And like you were saying, brother, you're able to when you're free, you're able to create, and you're able to run a business. It's freedom. It's freedom for you to run it the way you want to run it. And that's what we got to get to, and we're not there. But we want to get there. But that's the mentality that we got to pick up, is stop being a customer. And want to be an owner, to own land, property, you know, things like that, have assets, things of value, instead of always letting everybody else own and hold on everything, and you paying for it. We're always paying the bill. And we got to stop paying the bill and start letting somebody pay our way. So that's all I got to say. And like I said, the newcomers, you're in the right place, honey. So good night, everybody. That's it for me.
Okay, real quick before you go, brother, why do they call the stores in Detroit, why do they call them party stores, though?
Well, because it's all party supplies. It's you got your red cup, You got all the liquor you can get. You got your potato chips. You got, hey, you get everything in your arms and out the door. It's party time. It's like y'all say on Friday night, hey, go get your party stuff. And the party's here. That's why they call it party store.
Oh, all right, cool. All
right. Yeah.
See, all right. So just like Brother Leonard said, look at that. They done renamed their stores based on Friday night, based on turning up on Friday night. So now if you think we're going to go take some focus and change their mind, listen, man. All right, thank you, brother. Thank you for confirming that.
You got it.
All right. Sister T. Go ahead, sister. Hello? All right. Maybe she has her phone on mute.
I'm here.
Okay.
It was on mute. I want to say blessed greetings to everyone on the call. I have so much to say. We don't have time for it. But I do want to say thank you to Mai. I'm grateful for her in my life and on this call. She's smart. She's got the law down. And everything we need is in this room. It's right here. And it's right now. And it's not as complicated as some of us may want it to be. Just tidbits. And a team willing to put some work into action. And I thank you, Brother Lou, because you're faithful. You got this movement going. And you already know I'm down for it. So I do want to share my gratitude about that. I love everybody on the call. Brother Leonard, you know I love you. And everybody else on the call, really. Let's tribe up. Let's tribe up. Because if not now, when? Thank you, Brother Lou, for the opportunity. Good night, everybody.
All right. Thank you, Sister T. All right, brothers and sisters, we kind of sort of have got off to a slow start, but once we hit the ground running, this was a great call. I appreciate everyone coming to hang out with us tonight. And again, so anyone who hasn't yet joined us, visit blackwalletsmatter.org. Click the menu button up in the right-hand corner. You can look at the link that says Blueprint. That is our mission. That is exactly what this organization is focused on. If it resonates with you, then we invite you to become a member. There's a link for that. If you cannot become a member with a monthly contribution, then you can definitely make a one-time contribution if you believe in what we're trying to do and you wish to help us in our financial goals. All right, and that is all I would like to say. Peace. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Black Wallets Matter, and you matter.
Good night.